wants me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
So where will we go today? That's the theme for Abandoned Manitoba. And our guest, as always, is Gordon Goldsborough from the Manitoba Historical Society. So, Gordon, you're back. Now, last weekend you said we're going back to the marsh. What were you referring to?
Well, of course, our listeners will remember last week we talked about Frederick Philip Grove, the author.
Settlers of the Marsh.
Yes, indeed. Okay. One of his more famous books. Mm-hmm. And I want to stay in the marsh theme now. We're actually going to be staying on Lake Manitoba. In fact, just scooching down a little south on the south end of Lake Manitoba, a very large marsh, in fact, called Delta Marsh.
A marsh that you know exceedingly well, considering yes. that you have a best-selling book in Manitoba right now about the marsh.
Yes. It's something that I've had as part of my history going back a very long time. It's some place that I think of as very, very special.
That's where you and I first met, I remember, all those years ago.
Yes.
We went out, or you took me out to visit the field station there.
That's right. The University of Manitoba had a field station at Delta, the Delta Marsh Field Station, and that's, in fact, the site we're profiling today.
Okay, so when did the field station first come to be?
It started in 1965. A woman by the name of Jennifer Shea, who was a professor at the University of Manitoba, was given an opportunity. Basically, the provincial government here in Manitoba had purchased some property that had previously belonged to a guy named Donald Bain, and they had plans to build a water control structure, the Portage Diversion, from Portage la Prairie, from the Assiniboine River, north up to Lake Manitoba. The Bain property turned out to be right where the structure would terminate into the lake. And so they bought that property and used part of it to build the Portage Diversion. But there was remaining property there that they wanted to do something with. So they turned to the university and said, you know, could you use this in some way for sort of teaching and research? And Jennifer Shea was a botanist. She knew about the Delta Marsh. In fact, she had spent quite a bit of her time at Delta Marsh. And she said, oh, absolutely, we could establish a field station there. And so she did. And that was the beginnings of the Delta Marsh Field Station.
And how many buildings made up the field station?
Well, by the time it closed in 2010, it had 16 buildings altogether.
Wow. And what went on at the field station?
A whole variety of things. Primarily, of course, because it was a university facility, it focused on research and teaching. I, for example, did a lot of my research there on the impacts of human activities on marsh environments. I also taught classes as well, and there were classes on a wide range of topics, most of them relating to sort of environmental topics, botany, zoology, environmental science of various kinds.
I still have the bird book that you gave me when we were down there, and you introduced me to this really talented birder who was working at the research station.
Right, yeah. Delta Marsh is widely renowned for the abundance of birds there. That's been said, and I think it's probably true, that there's more birds in terms of numbers of birds, but also more different kinds of birds at Delta than anywhere else in Manitoba. So anyone who's a bird watcher, this is the place to go.
So when did it reach its peak in terms of activity?
Well, it depends what you mean, I suppose. I mean, it was, before the field station started, a very active hunting lodge.
So there was a lodge that became part of the field station?
Indeed, yes.
There was that old house there.
That's right, yeah.
See, yeah.
The field station was around this old hunting lodge that Donald Bain had built back in 1932. And there was a number of other buildings along with it. There was a caretaker's residence.
Oh, it's coming back to me now. Yeah.
Yeah. And a number of other buildings as well. The main lodge, though, was sort of the showpiece. It was a dramatic building.
It was, yeah.
He built it, say, in the 30s as sort of his home away from home. He was here in Winnipeg. He was a grocery broker. He made quite a lot of money basically being the middleman for grocers. But actually, he was probably more famous as a hockey player. What I often say is that he was the captain of the first Winnipeg team to win the Stanley Cup. That was the Winnipeg Victorias in 1895. And he retired at the height of his fame, actually, after winning the cup again a second time in 1901. And then he sort of settled into a comfortable business career. So he made an awful lot of money and owned a lot of property, a lot of other things, and including he built this magnificent lodge at Delta.
So what stands on the site of the field station now?
Well, in the aftermath of the 2011 flood, of course, many people will remember that in 2011 there was a rather severe flood along Lake Manitoba. And a few of the buildings were damaged and ultimately were torn down. Of the 16 buildings that I mentioned, three remain today, including Bain's old lodge. It's still standing.
Is there any use made of them?
Right now, no. There is, I understand, an engineering study being carried out with the hope that at some point the buildings may be able to be moved to a site that is less flood prone. See, the problem is that it's in an area that is prone to flooding. And I think the concern is that in the future, there could be future floods. And so I think the idea is to move it somewhere else where it just isn't subject to those floods.
Is there any research going on of the sort that had gone on at the research station still?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the closure of the station did not close the research. In fact, in some ways, it's actually more active now than it was. We are in the process of doing a project called Restoring the Tradition, basically to look at the various factors that have caused the marsh to decline and try to reverse them. So one of those, for example, was the abundance of carp in the marsh. And we have for the last 3 years been looking at a carp exclusion project. But now in the last few months, we've been actually going into the second phase of that project, where we're looking at the landscape influences, the fertilizer, the manure, the sewage, and various other chemicals that run into the marsh and degrade it. So in fact, we probably have had the largest number of people, graduate students, undergraduate students, researchers, working at Delta we've had in decades. It's very active.
And what do they work out of? Is there a building they still use?
Yes. Well, we've had to move around a little bit. We weren't, of course, able to stay at the university site. We moved for a while over to a place a little east of there. Presently, we're over on the far east side of the marsh, a lodge called the Eaton Lodge. Of course, after the Eaton's family, who owned the big department store here in Winnipeg.
I remember you pointed out to me that on the beach, in the kind of dune, there were military vehicles buried in the sand. Is that still true?
That is true. Back in the 1950s, when they had another period of very high water on Lake Manitoba, Donald Bain, in an effort to try to protect his lodge, went and bought a bunch of surplus World War II personnel carriers, kind of look about the size of a Jeep, not a very big thing, but they had a track on them, so they were quite robust. And he parked them end to end, one after the other, in front of his lodge along the beach. And in fact, for years, we didn't know they were there for certain. I mean, this was a story that I had heard until we had a fellow show up one time who was a buff on antique military hardware. And he said, I've heard this rumor too, and I'm really curious to know if they're in good condition. So I said, well, I'm curious too. So why don't we have an excavation and see? So he dug, and sure enough, there they were. And not only were they there, but because they had been buried in sand, and sand was quite poor and had drained away, they were in a remarkable stage of preservation. So much so that, in fact, he asked, well, could we possibly remove one of them to restore it? And I said, well, you know, sure. But they put some boulders back in to provide that sort of stability that these structures had done. And they restored it. And I've actually seen it operating. They actually made it run again. So that was pretty impressive.
So can we get down to the site of the former research station now?
No, unfortunately, you cannot. The provincial government, who owns the site, they always did, in fact. It was only ever leased to the university, have controlled access. I think they're concerned mainly about personal safety. So there is a gate that is kept closed, and unfortunately, it is locked.
Wow. Well, thanks for the story, and thanks all those years ago for introducing me to the research station that's really no longer there.
Well, glad to do it.
Thank you, Gordon. And next week?
Well, next week's site offers what I think Lavarandre thought was a panoramic view.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. See you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.